afternoon, you're listening to Burst Radio covering South Coast and Rio with me, Lydia Moorman, broadcasting live from Bournemouth University. Today we'll be giving you an Olympic Games preview as the countdown continues with less than 3 months to go until Brazil becomes centre stage for the Olympic Games. Athletes from 206 nations are undergoing strenuous training as they compete for gold. Firstly in today's show, we'll be talking to Kate McGregor. Professional sailor Kate took part in the 2012 Olympics and first began sailing in pool. Hello, Kate. Hi, Kate.
Hello.
Hiya, hi. Thank you for joining us. How are the waters looking today?
It's pretty windy at the moment, but it's good.
Perfect for getting some good training in. So, just a few questions. Do you think that pool as a local destination played a role in your emotional connection to sailing?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Grew up in pool, went to school in pool, and I've always been by the water. So we just grew up as a family doing it.
That's really cool. So the 49er FX trials for Rio. So for many of our listeners, they won't know what 49er FX is as a sport. So could you give us a bit of information on that?
So the 49er FX is a two-person boat. The 49er is the boys' version, which has a bigger sail. And the FX is new into Rio 2016, which is what I've been campaigning in since London 2012.
Okay, and how did the trials go for that?
Unfortunately, it didn't go to plan. We basically have been battling injuries. Basically, sailing's getting more and more extreme, so there's a lot more injuries than there used to be. And unfortunately, we were at the end of the injuries most of the time. So our trials ended a bit earlier for us.
Okay.
So it didn't go the way we wanted to, but it was still a good experience and good looking forward to it for 2020.
Okay, and could you tell us, when these things happen that you're not expecting and things don't quite go to plan, what drives your passion and keeps you motivated?
Well, the good thing about sailing is it's just so varied, that every day is different. So I think that's what keeps me going, and it's unique to have your profession as also your hobby. So yeah. We're quite lucky for that.
Perfect. And what are your predictions for Great Britain at Rio?
Well, for sailing, it looks like it's quite a young team compared to London 2012. But everyone's got a really good chance of medalling. I think as a nation as a whole, I think everyone will be thriving off London still. So hopefully it will be looking good.
Thank you so much for your time and good luck with your future training.
No worries. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
We've also got Betty in the studio with us today, who is a journalist as well as a rower. Welcome, Betty. How are you?
Hello. I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Good. Thank you very much.
Brilliant.
So, did living in Dorset by the sea, because you moved here for university, I'm assuming, did that encourage you to take up a water sport, or were you already passionate back home?
I was always passionate about doing sports. I've always been very into my sports, but coming to Bournemouth, I thought, oh, I can do something quite new. Rowing's actually on a river, so we don't row on the sea, so the sea didn't really have much of an impact on why I started rowing, but it's a challenging sport, and that's why I thought, you know what, I'm going to give that a go.
Perfect. And is it a particularly popular sport in the Olympics? Like, does it get much coverage?
Yeah, it does. It's getting more and more popular. Obviously, the rowing won gold, the one that GB's first gold at London Olympics. So, yeah, it's definitely getting more and more popular.
Perfect. And how's the rowing team for this year looking for Great Britain, do you know?
They're looking fairly strong. I mean, it's quite a big squad. The women's top eight won gold at the Euros, which were quite recently. So it's definitely looking promising for the women. I'm quite unsure about the men at the moment, but, you know, it's a very tough category, but I'm sure they'll do well.
And for one of your journalistic pieces, you wrote about Olympic aspirations. Did this open your eyes as to behind the scenes, obviously as a sportswoman, did this what did you learn? And
I think the biggest thing was the amount of pressure which is put on Olympic athletes going to Rio. A lot of them are very, very young, and that immense amount of pressure which is put on them is just absolutely ridiculous. The training schedule is very, very intense as well, and they're training like 3 times a day, and it's that pressure to meet the standards, and it's the pressure that they put on themselves more so than anything else, because they want to do well for their country. And yeah, competition is just so hard at the moment, especially to get into Rio. Sport is becoming more popular with children coming through the ranks, and so competition's just getting harder and harder to even get a space in a GB team to go to the Olympics.
Perfect. And can you give us any predictions for Rio 2016?
To be honest, I think GB are going to do fairly well. In rowing, they have got such a strong team. They're on a really, really hard training programme. And they're entering a lot of boats this year. So, you know, fingers crossed, they're going to do really well. I think GB in general, fairly well. I mean, let's hope they get to the top of the medals table, but you just never know sport, do you?
Thank you so much for your time, for coming in. It's really appreciated.
That's all right.
So, with all the excitement which comes with the Olympic Games, Rio has had its fair share of negative press. Political, economic and environmental problems have caused uproar worldwide, and now organisers have less than 3 months to address these problems. I'm joined here in the studio by our reporter, Poppy Bullen. Poppy, could you tell us about some of the political issues that not only Rio but the whole of Brazil are facing ahead of the Games?
Well, it's been described as one of the most dramatic corruption scandals in modern political history, and it could not have come at a worse time. Dilma Rousseff, the president of Brazil, might be getting kicked out of office after allegedly violating budget laws so she was able to spend more on her re-election campaign back in 2014.
And that's not the only one of the issues that the country is facing, is it?
Sadly, yes. Rio's waters are filled with human sewage as well as disease-causing bacteria viruses. It was so bad last year that the athletes fell ill after taking part in test events. After winning the bid, organisers pledged to clean up the water, but are now going back on this statement, saying it won't be as clean as it was originally planned.
That's awful. And so are there a lot of health concerns?
Well, the main issue is the outbreak of the Zika virus. It's a mosquito-carried disease which has spread across South America and has centred in Brazil. The virus causes severe birth defects and neurological problems. It was declared a public emergency, and the Brazilian government have sent troops door-to-door to combat the mosquitoes that are in people's homes. The World Health Organization chief, Margaret Chan, has said that although they are increasingly worried about the virus, they do not recommend cancelling the Games this year.
There can't possibly be any more bad news.
I'm afraid there is. Brazil is in an economical crisis and is facing the worst recession since the 1930s. Budgets are getting slashed left, right and centre, with the country looking to save $530 million. Food and travel costs have been reduced for the Olympic officials, and at one point, organisers were discussing whether athletes would have to pay for their own air conditioning, which would seem ridiculous in the Brazilian heat. But thankfully, the organisers have realised this and decided against it.
That's a crazy expectation for some of the nation's top athletes.
And on top of this, there's been budget scandals with Petrobras, a state-run oil firm, which has large involvements with building a majority of Olympic structures.
And Justin, we've had a breaking news story about the Olympics. Could you tell us a bit more about information on that?
Well, there's been up to 31 athletes that could be banned after Beijing resets for the Great British team. The International Olympics Committee retested 454 selected doping samples from the 2008 Games in Beijing. It's also revealed it's awaiting the results of 250 retests from 2012. And it's shown once again that dopers have no place to hide, and stopping many doping athletes from participating in Rio 2016.
Thank you so much for that. It's really helpful, Poppy. In a few months' time, the whole world will be watching, so I'm sure Brazil will do their best to be prepared. Luckily, one of the structures that hasn't caused concern is the venue for the indoor volleyball.
Now, though volleyball made its Olympic debut in the 1964 Tokyo Olympics, there has never been a British indoor volleyball team until London 2012. London 2012 Olympian with over 100 international caps, Dan Hunter, is on the phone to us now. Dan, how long have you played volleyball?
I started when I was 14, or just before 14. I've played locally, so I grew up in Poole. So I play played with at the club from a young age, 18, was when I kind of made the jump to almost semi-pro. So I was in full-time training then with the Great Britain Development Squad, which was based in Sheffield. And then after that, a couple of years, I did some time in Greece, a few months out there, and then was professional in Holland for 2 years building up to the Olympics.
So do you think that as volleyball is an Olympic sport, that's made it more popular as a sport overall?
I think at the moment, and before we won the Olympic bid, volleyball was probably not as well recognised sport as it is in the rest of the world. It's a massively popular sport in a lot of other countries, and has participated. I think it's a silly fear, about 800 million people play volleyball. Around the world, it's a massive sport out there. When we won the bid, there was obviously a lot of focus on preparing all sports for the Olympics. I think the publicity and the participation levels did increase going into the Olympics. I think we struggled kind of afterwards to push on from that and develop even more.
So how was it competing in the Olympics for your country?
It was amazing. It was a lot of years of hard work. We were away for a long periods of time, knowing that the country wasn't really at a good enough level for us to train. We spent most of our time abroad, trying to get ourselves to the highest level possible. But yeah, once we stepped out on the court for the first time, it made all those years of early morning starts, silly hours, lights, and all the other stuff you don't see behind the scenes worth it.
How did your role as an Olympian play in your development as a volleyball player?
Having gone through that experience, I've learned a lot about handling the pressure and performing under pressure, but I think that was a kind of combination of the years of playing. Obviously, after that, the experience of playing at that level has meant that I can be a bit more consistent. So over the recent years, coming back to the UK and going into the European Champs this year, where the level isn't quite at the pinnacle of the sport where we're at the moment, we should be able to provide a pretty consistent performance and hopefully pass on the experience to the younger guys that are now coming through.
Obviously, you play for Wessex. Do you think South Coast sports team contributed well to the Olympics?
I think everybody in the country kind of did as much as they could. You know, without the clubs like Wessex, all the players would never have been developed. I would never have come somewhere. And I think all the clubs, you know, pulled the players to a level to get them recognised. And from that point on, it was a case of obviously moving on into a more professional environment, because all clubs in the UK are amateur at the moment, although that's something I know a lot of people are trying to push forward and make semi-pro and professional. But they got us as far as we could go, but to get to the Olympic level, we needed to move abroad. So I think they did everything they can, but it was recognised that we had to do more.
Do you think that the South Coast sports teams like Wessex will contribute well to the Olympics in Rio this summer, or do you think it's more professional clubs?
Yeah, I can't speak for other sports, but I know if it wasn't for the kind of the local clubs of the more grassroots sports in the UK, a lot of players would never have got found. So they do play a massive role, and all the volunteers that keep them going, you know, without them, you know, you will have loads of stories similar to mine where without the volunteers that initially got you into the sport at the lower level and got you playing and got you enjoying it, you never would have made it to the top. I think that every sports club has a massive role in playing that. So maybe for Rio, but that work was probably done, you know, maybe 8 years ago. So the athletes about to go to Rio by the clubs, and the athletes that are currently in the clubs, hopefully the Rio Games will inspire them to go back to the clubs, train harder, do more, and you'll see them get their rewards in the future Olympics.
What are your predictions for Britain at Rio this summer?
I think it's going to be difficult to get the same number of medals that we did. I think I reckon we can do better. I think that we will. It'll be seen as a difficult job, but I think the British courage will come through out there. I think we'll see a lot of new faces that we probably haven't heard of before get onto the podium. I'm excited to see that, and I'm excited to see the Brazilian flair on the carnival atmosphere that will be out there. Hopefully it's going to be a completely different games to London, but just as good, no doubt.
And obviously you mentioned you've got the European Championships next week. How are you feeling about that?
Yeah, pretty excited. We lost all our funding after the Olympics, unfortunately, so this is our first senior event. It's not as Great Britain. We're just going as an England team into the tournament, so although that's a slight shame that we don't have the strongest club for Great Britain, we'll be going there to win though. So first tournament after the Olympics for us, rebuilding now for the future, so hopefully it's the first of many tournaments and the first of getting us back to the Olympic Games after so long.
Thank you, Dan. That's great. And best of luck in the European Championships.
We are now going to speak to Adam Knott, a goalball Paralympian from Chandlersford in Hampshire. At only 17, he competed for Team GB at London 2012, and he's going to give us his views on the prospects of the British Paralympic teams this year. Hi, Adam.
Hi there.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm not bad, thank you. Yourself?
Good, yeah, I'm fine. So firstly, would you be able to explain to our listeners briefly how goalball works and what it is?
Yep, so goalball is like no other sport. It's a sport for the blind and visually impaired. And really the maximum amount of vision you're allowed to play with is 10%. But because there are different levels of sight that play, everyone's blindfolded. And the aim of the game is there are two teams of three, defending a goal, each defending a goal that is 9 metres wide and the court is 18 metres long. And you basically have to try and throw this ball with bells inside of it into your opponent's goal. And they have to try and stop it with their body. So it's all done on hearing because you're wearing blindfolds and the ball has bells inside of it. And all the markings on the floor are marked out with string so you can feel where you are. So it's like no other sport, really.
Wow, sounds really interesting, like a lot of skills involved there. And how did you get into it?
A bit of luck, really, but back in 2010, I went along to just like try it out and see what goalball was. I'd heard about it, but never really wanted to play it. But I thought, okay, I'll go and give it a go. And I went and tried it out back in January 2010 with like one of these Paralympics GB tryout days. And 6 months later, they got back in touch with me, said, we'd like to see you come along and try it a bit more. And I just got invited up to a Great Britain training session. And that was the first time I'd really played properly and haven't stopped since.
Wow, amazing story. And obviously you were quite young when you were in the 2012 Olympics. Did you find that people didn't take you as seriously because you were younger? And also, what effect did this have on your social life? Because obviously it's an age where people are out partying and you must have been doing a lot of training.
Yeah, I don't think it made any difference at all to how people respected me because of my age. They respect any athlete at any games because you've trained to get there, whatever your age is. So I don't think that made a difference at all. In terms of social life, it was very difficult. That time of year, that time of your life, you have a lot of schoolwork as well, and obviously training 6 days a week, so there wasn't much of a social life. But everyone understood that. I just led a different life to everyone else, really. When a lot of people went out and stuff, I had to do my training. I was away for a lot of weekends, but that was what I chose to do, and everyone respected that.
Yeah, I can understand. And it was obviously an amazing experience to be part of Team Great Britain in London in 2012. Could you tell us a bit more about what it was like for you?
Yeah, it was great. Just one of my best, proudest sporting moment. We normally play goal in front of 10, 12 people. It's quite a small sport quite a small sport wherever not many people have heard of it. But when we played in London, it was front of 7,500 people, which is a massive change and something you have to get used to. And especially is because goalballs were done with a blindfold, everyone in the audience has to be silent. So that was interesting as well. But to play in front of 7,500 people is really quite amazing. The experience of living in the village with all the other athletes, all the media commitments you have to do, and then the parade afterwards through London, it was all one amazing experience and one hopefully that I'll be able to repeat, sadly not in Rio, but maybe in Tokyo in 4 years' time.
Definitely. And it sounds like there's a lot of teamwork involved in the sport. And how was that working closely with the team and like the relationships that you built?
Yeah, it's a lot of hard work. Like in any sport, team-wise, the more you play together, the easier it gets. Especially when you're blindfolded. So there has to be a lot of trust, a lot of communication between yourself and your team members, because a lot of things could go wrong on the goalball court. You could lose where you are, you could trip over your players, could be injuries and everything. So especially on the goalball court, you have to work really hard to learn how each other play, learn how to play together. And that takes a lot of time. And that's something that as a team we're developing. We're a new team. We're quite young. So we're learning to do that, whereas other teams have played together for many, many years and they've had that experience. But that will come down to experience, and over time we'll have more experience and we'll get better and better. But it's definitely a team sport that takes a lot of trust and communication with each other and practice together.
And do you think the London 2012 Olympics, like I think you said earlier, definitely boosted awareness and the interest in and not just the sport but Paralympics in general?
Yeah, definitely. In terms of goalball, we started, well, around the Paralympics time, there were probably about 10 teams in the country, 10 clubs at a domestic level. And now we have up to 30 clubs at a domestic level. So on a club front, goalball has just grown massively. A lot more players have come into the sport. A lot more people know about it. And I'm sure that's the same in a lot of other sports, other Paralympic sports. People have got a lot more awareness, so more clubs have been formed, people are getting more involved with these things, which is all great, and all because of London.
Yeah. And would you encourage people that maybe do have a disability and don't feel like they can join in with sports, that this is a great thing to get involved with? How has it affected you?
I think anyone that can get involved in a sport is a really important thing to do. If you're disabled or not, it gives you, for example, goalball is a sport for visually impaired. It's very difficult to play a lot of other sports when you're visually impaired. You can easily think about it. You play football, the ball is very quick. Any type of small ball sports, tennis, badminton, squash, anything, it's very difficult with a visual impairment. So to be on that even playing field and all get the chance to play together in a team sport such as goalball, other VI sports such as cricket and things like that, it's great just to have that chance to have a go at it. I got involved in goalball when I was 15, 16, and I've been playing sport for many years before that. And sport just gives you that chance to be part of a team, or if it's an individual sport, you're still working as part of a team. It gives you that confidence, that independence, especially if you've got to travel to training, to tournaments and things like that. So I think anyone that can get involved in sport, disabled or able-bodied, it's a really important thing to do.
Yeah, definitely. And also, how was it representing when you're travelling around and you're in the Olympics to represent Hampshire and the South Coast on such a national and international level?
It's great. Yeah, whenever we get the chance to put our Great Britain track suits on, or whenever we're travelling as a team, it's really nice just to wear those tracksuits, to be really proud of wearing the tracksuits, to know we put the hard work in, and to know we're representing the country and where we're from and things like that. And people come and ask, what do you do? What sport do you play? And it gets the awareness out there even more. So for anyone to be able to put on a Great Britain tracksuit, or even a tracksuit to represent your county or anything, it's a really proud thing to be able to do.
You can imagine. And finally, is there any tips or predictions for how you think England's going to perform in Rio in 2016?
Goalball front, there's no goalball team there. Sadly, the way things work, we didn't qualify. But as I said, we're hoping to do Tokyo. On a whole Paralympics GB level, I'm sure that it's going to be a very, very successful game. There's a massive team working together and getting loads of people to the games and people performing the best they can. So I'm sure, as London was a majorly successful event for Paralympics GB, Rio will be as well.
Perfect. Thank you so much for your time, Dan. We really appreciate it, and all the best for the future.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
Bye. We hope today has whet your appetite for the upcoming Rio Olympics, which officially starts August the 5th. Let's hope that Team GB can match or emulate 2012's 65 medals, 29 of which were gold, and do Britain proud once again. We also wish the best to our Paralympians, with their Paralympics kicking off on the 7th of September. Last time round, Team GB won 104 medals in these games, a great achievement which we hope can be repeated. And finally, a huge good luck to all the South Coast athletes competing in the Olympics this year.
like secret lovers kiss. Need a little more.